Hi, today's January 24th. I wrote the wrong date in the show notes. 2021. And this is Movies Podcast 348. I'm Todd Agassi-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. My wife is gesturing to me, so I got distracted. I didn't know what she was pointing at. Hence the pause. Oh, she was asking if I wanted that light on. Actually, I'll turn on the other light, which just makes more sense. Anyway, and today we've got mostly revisiting some past purchases, but I wanted to get started with a couple of things. One is a historical note. And John, I don't know if you remember this one, Two Cows. Do you remember Two Cows? T-U-C-O-W-S?
Up until at least 2 or 3 years ago, this was the only place to find software that I had released in 1997. I no longer was hosting the installer. Yeah. And I remember about maybe 10 or so years ago, I downloaded that software, put it in a virtual machine, installed it, ran it for the first time in 20 years, and still was able to generate a registration key for it, which is even more amazing when one thinks about it. So, yeah, Two Cows and the end of an era to think about those websites that used to be before apps came in app stores. We had online marketplaces like Two Cows for, download, freeware, shareware, donationware. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the only place to get kind of non-traditional software that wasn't shrink-wrapped, right? Software commercial packages all usually came in shrink-wrapped packages. You wanted some little tool like, or something like John wrote. and you'd go there, and it was great, you know? So anyway, Two Cows is shutting down the company itself is surviving as, I think, a domain registrar or something like that. But the entity's still around, but basically nobody's used it. It's been kind of in legacy support mode for a number of years now. And they're shutting it down. So, another one bites the dust. Makes sense, though. It's definitely a different world from the 1990s. I don't know if you remember Simtel 20, which was actually... I think it was actually on a military site. I think it was like White Sands Missile Testing Range. And then it became a commercial site that was based off of that. And also, I think these two are still around, but not what they used to be. Fresh Meat, I need to go check that. Fresh Meat and SourceForge.
SourceForge is still around. And I'm actually, you go there and it doesn't look anything like the old SourceForge.
No.
But I'm actually logging to see if I can... Well, I tried logging into my SourceForge account. It says my password is expired and I have to change my password.
Well, they still have your account, though.
But I don't think... Yeah, they still have my account, but I think that's about it. I think they even still have maybe some of my old projects on there.
Yeah.
But
SourceForge lost a lot of credibility a number of years ago when it was sold. It, along with some other things, like other properties like Slashdot, were sold to a company that turned it basically into a adware site where they would put adware wrappers and even nastier kinds of wrappers on it and really tick people. I stopped using it at that point, so which is why I didn't know if it was still around. Fresh Meat was another one. Fresh Meat was a kind of a, I don't know if it was a sister site, might have been, but it was a site to go find open source software, write-ups, real short ones that kind of tell you, hey, announcement, I have this new app that does this, and not an app. I have this source code that does this. You can download it from SourceForge or my site or whatever. At any rate, if they're not gone, they're not what they used to be anymore. So fond farewell to Two Cows and other. I assume it's pronounced Two Cows. Is that? I never really heard anyone.
As far as I know, I don't know what else it would be called. And I remember, I think one of their very old logos did have two
cows on it.
Cows. Below. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just telling John, I'm trying, I put my second screen, my iPad, below my MacBook screen to try to not move my head left to right so the microphone would stay on my mouth would stay near the microphone in a consistent manner. But it also means since I didn't change my mouse orientation, I have to move my mouse left to right to go down. So a little bit of an adjustment. The next topic before we get to the main thing is a really short one, I think. And it only applies to you if you use, or if you have an enterprise or school educational Microsoft 365 account. But if you do, they released Microsoft Lists app for iOS. Microsoft Lists is part of, well, at least the way I think of it, Microsoft Lists is part of the Microsoft Teams platform. I'm not sure if it runs separately like Microsoft Planner does. But at any rate, it's a great no-code solution for building lists of all kinds if you use Microsoft Teams. But, you know, one of the things is you have to go find the team channel that you put it in, and it takes a little while to do that sometimes if you've got a lot of team channels like I do. But anyway, Microsoft Lists for iOS runs on your iPhone. It also runs on your iPad, but it's scaled to the iPhone, so you got to hit that, you know, 2X button to fill up the screen. But it's great. It's a great no-code solution. I use it a lot. And it's now I can, you know, find stuff on my iPad and iPhone right away without having to go find a channel in Teams and all that. So it's super helpful. If you're on Microsoft Teams already, highly recommend it. It's a great tool.
It's interesting in reading about it. It is basically a rebadging of SharePoint Lists.
All of Teams is. So really,
Todd looked shocked for a moment there.
Yeah. Most of Teams...
You stuttered for a moment there.
Yeah. Most of Teams is actually built on SharePoint, if I recall correctly. So, in fact, if you look at the files...
So it's just taking...
Yeah. But the thing...
Yeah, just taking that list ability that's pretty robust in SharePoint and bringing it to iOS, which is
nice.
I hate
the SharePoint lists because it looks terrible. It's permissioning is terrible. Especially if you do custom permissions, it's a lot saner and more human friendly. Microsoft Lists is a lot saner. In fact, I think that's how I described it to some people, is that it's a sane, human friendly version of the SharePoint list, which is basically what, you know, most of SharePoint is based on, that and document libraries. So highly recommend it. Really like the way it does stuff. It makes stuff usable, in my opinion. All right. Okay, now we're getting into our revisiting past purchases section. John's got a whole bunch. I just added one thing in because I thought we were just going to do one a week. But John wants to do like 12 a week.
Oh.
So.
If you want this to be the full episode or what. Yeah. But, I think we got something to talk about here. And you can cut me off whenever you want to cut off.
Nah, we don't have any other topics aside from what we just talked about. So, you know, and that took up a whole 8 minutes, so including me stuttering. So, you know, we'll get to it. So the first thing is the one thing on my revisiting past purchases, and I bought it just recently, and I'm showing it. I don't know if John can see it. I'm showing it to John. Mm-hmm. So it's an iPod holder. It works on iPad too. And it's called the. It's not a big name brand. Nulaxy, Nulaxy. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Nulaxy A4 cell phone stand. It's fully foldable and adjustable. And you know, if you've ever used various stands for a tablet or a phone, they tend to be pretty static. Maybe they've got a couple of notches and you can adjust the angle in, you know, static steps, and it you know, most of them probably work really well for you. But for whatever reason, I really wanted something that was, I won't use the word infinitely adjustable, but more adjustable. And this thing really fits the bill, and it's only $12. That's the thing that's really impressive. So it's $12. It's solid metal. I'm tapping on it right now, as far as I can tell. Got four rubber feet, so it's, you know, it won't slip on a smooth surface. It's got some rubber clips on the bottom to hold the bottom of your phone and also the back or your tablet. And it is adjustable in like a whole lot of degrees. So it's really handy. You could use it as a tripod, really, if you wanted to, because the at least for an iPhone and my Android phones, the camera sticks on top. So it's really great. And I found that since I've bought it, I use it a lot more than any other stand I've bought. You know, and I've bought a lot over the years. And I found that I use it with my keyboard more. I generally, you know, use the on-screen keyboard. But now that I've got a really nice stand that I'm happy with and it's really adjustable, especially as your eyes get older and you and the rest of your body gets older. Yep. You know, you really need to, you know, get that like, okay, that's fine, right? And it's really great. So I pull out a little Bluetooth keyboard, and if I don't want to, you know, grab a notebook or something or iPad and type away at it, it is great. Works, you know, landscape or portrait, kind of more natural for portrait in my opinion, but really doesn't matter. It works both ways. And gee, $12, you know, hard to go wrong.
Most of the things I have on my list were pretty low cost, although I do have some more expensive things. I tried on my list to think about things that, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, I could look back on in some cases and go, that was a great product, and it's so weird how it's still around or not around or morphed into a niche and everything else. And I did. This did give me a chance to revisit my Amazon purchase history going all the way back to 2004, 2003. So, yeah, I have a lot of things, and we can just kind of talk through some of them. And I'll tell you why I find them interesting versus, you know, they're obviously not useful now, some of these. But I do have a few that I think are surprisingly useful that people just don't know exist.
Okay.
Anyway.
Or no longer exist.
A 60 gigabyte iPod video that I bought in for $3.99 in December of 2005. The reason I bring this up, because we were talking about revisiting past purchases.
Yeah.
As far as I know, this one still might be in operation. And you might be wondering why someone would still be using a iPod video, a 60 gigabyte iPod video from 2005. In 2017 or so, I had had this thing and I used it pretty heavily from 2005 to 2009 or so when our pocket PCs started getting good enough and fast enough that you could really keep media on them. And, you know, it wasn't so crazy to use them as a media player.
Yeah.
And I think officially it got retired when I bought a Zune, when Zune came out. So the reason I bring this up is I would take it out every year or two and charge it just to see if it was still power up and still charge and all that. It sat in a box. And around 2017, a friend of mine who is has a very specific job needs asked me, do you still have that old iPod video? I said, yeah, I still have it. He goes, does it boot up? Does it work? I said, yeah, it boots up. And I just, you know, he goes, yeah, my 30 gigabyte from 2005 died. And I need one. Are you using it? I said, no. So I sent it to him. He is a defense contractor, and he works in environments that he cannot have any electronics that have any kind of cellular connectivity, data connectivity,
or records.
You know, wireless connectivity,
or
video, or video recording, or, record video or audio. And so the old iPod videos were still on the allowed list of electronics that he could use to listen to music while he worked. And so as far as I know, that device might still be alive today. And I think it's just crazy how this many years later, you could have a device still be perfectly useful for its intended purpose if given the right circumstances.
That's interesting. You know, because like you, I had a 30 gigabyte iPod video. Unfortunately, the last time I tried to charge it, the battery exploded.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunate.
But it worked up until then. You know, it worked up until that last recharge attempt. And I still used it now and then. You know, it was sitting in a Logitech speaker with a, you know, 30-pin connector, not a Bluetooth, that I would, you know, use it to play stuff, mostly podcasts and music on occasion. So when that died, the speaker was retired because there was nothing else to plug into it.
Yeah.
And it was designed for the iPod, you know, video. So even though there was a 30-pin, other 30-pin devices don't really fit well on it, or at least don't sit quite well. But anyway, yeah, it was a great device. And I remember carrying an iPod and a, you know, phone for, boy, I want to say at least, I bought my first one in 2004. Which is, I guess, when you bought, or near when you bought yours. And I carried mine for at least 4 or 5 more years before I felt like I had enough storage on my mobile device to, you know, do anything. Basically, when SD cards got cheap and big is when that happened.
Well, you're hearkening back to a time that I think you and I forget, even though we lived through it. And that was when you carried a ton of random little dedicated devices.
That is true.
So I just put a link in our show notes to a bag that I still own, and I bought it in 2004, 2005. It was the Rode Wired, if you remember that company.
I do.
Mega Media Bag. And the Rode Wired Mega Media Bag was 5 pounds by itself. I should say it still is, because, like I said, I still own two of them.
Yeah.
And it had some crazy giant number of pockets, something like 36 different pockets and compartments. I mean, it's a huge, huge bag. You can actually still buy it, I think, at Autorama Camera has a listing for it, but they don't sell it anymore. But the point is, this was back at a time when you needed the ability to carry around so many different, you know, a device for this, a device for that, a little pocket camera, a different camera for something else, a webcam, a mouse, a keyboard, some files, some paper files, a magazine or two. You know, it's crazy how many things have now been replaced by your phone or your tablet.
You know, you are so right. In fact, I was just thinking, I wonder if I have any photos from that era. Because I also used to carry like a portable Wi-Fi to plug into the Ethernet in the hotel so I could get Wi-Fi in my room. And like you said, point-and-shoot camera, which I still do carry on occasion because, you know, it still has a bigger zoom than any phone I have. And I know some of our friends will harken back to the Lumia, whatever it was, with the giant, you know, megapixel display that you could just crop and, you know, still have a nice picture. But, you know, aside from that, most of us stuck with, you know, 2 to 5x zoom. I got to ask you about your zoom on your new iPhone Max one of these days. But, wow, trip to back to memory lane. Yeah, it is amazing how much we don't carry anymore. It really is.
To the point that when I've flirted around with the idea of just not carrying a bag sometimes to work. And I've gone through periods of time where I've been able to just carry a tablet or... It is very, very interesting to think about how far we've come with these abilities. But like I said, whenever I look at that Mega Media bag, I haven't been able to part with it yet. It was one of my first really nice gadget bags. But I don't think there's ever a chance I'm going to use it anytime soon because I'm not going to want to carry that much stuff around.
It is amazing. That said, I still do carry two phones and a tablet with me. So it's not like I've gotten down to one yet, although I certainly could if I really wanted to. The next one, the year that you bought this, I find interesting because I bought this, or I guess its predecessor, like in the late 90s, like mid to late 90s, 96, 97.
Yeah. Well, I had the predecessor as well. But as I was going through my Amazon purchases, I had forgotten about this one. This was the Timex Digital Iron Man Data Link USB watch.
Oh, just different USB.
Than the data link that we had in the 90s where you had the flashing lights and the photo sensor that would program it. Yeah. They kept Data Link around. And I think I actually had bought two of these at one point. And they both sort of died at the first battery replacement. It was back in that time when you're doing a battery replacement on a digital watch, you really took your life in your hands and it might not come back to life when you put the new battery in it. Yeah. But it's just interesting to me how, you know, Timex had a wearable for 20 years. The data links, you know, you figure more like 15 years. You figure 95 to 2010. And very few people use them, even though they provided a lot of the same information as an Apple Watch does, just in static form, you know, looking up contacts or looking up, you know, your daily schedule, those sorts of things. It's a little mini PDA.
But yep. Even had a calculator.
I had forgotten that I was $60 too. Yeah.
Yep. Even had a calculator with a physical keyboard. Does this one have a calculator with a physical keyboard? I kind of remember mine did.
No. This one didn't. This one actually just looked like a regular Timex Iron Man watch. Okay. It didn't look that special until you realized that on the right side of it were a bunch of contacts for the USB cable. Because it was a non-standard USB.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because after my 1995, 1996 Timex watch died, probably when I tried to replace the battery, I stopped wearing a watch for years until... Okay, and now I'm going to get teary-eyed. Our beloved Spot Watch appeared. old Microsoft Spot Watch. The Suntu. I had the Suntu. And actually, I had like three Suntus in a row. But it was a great device. I still miss it. It's, I think about it like I think about, you know, a past pet or something. It was beloved.
Yes, loved to watch. Wearables have been around. If you're listening to this podcast and you didn't know it, wearables have been around a lot longer than you think.
Yeah. And if you're young enough, a lot longer than you.
Yeah, that's true.
Like your students.
My students don't know about a time. I mean, some of them, let's see, most of them were now born in 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
So some of them, the 60 gigabyte iPod video that I just talked about could have been a good, you know, two second birthday gift for them, you know, if they were extremely advanced 2 year old.
Yeah. Or like, oh gosh, I remember my grandpa had one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
Next
up on my list. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have one of the, I still have this. I don't know where it is, but I think I still have it.
I had a lot of it left, and then a mutual acquaintance of ours, Judy Stanford, I sent her all of these when I was done with them, when I stopped using them. But I had a lot of LiveScribe notebooks and a few of the LiveScribe pens and tablets and post-it notes. I had them from 2010 to probably about 2013 or so, like mid 2013 I stopped using them.
That sounds amazing.
But they were pretty cool, but then things got easier on a tablet. You know, in 2010, the iPod or the iPad was still brand new. It had just come out in 2010.
Yep.
Note-taking was not something easily accomplished on a tablet or a computer or a smartphone. Unless you had a tablet PC, which I did, but that wasn't the best experience either, to be honest, in taking notes.
Yep.
This was the last thing I had that was a paper analog, but still could be digitized. And there was a pretty robust ecosystem. Looking back, I mean, I had LiveScribe post-it notes that I could write and give to someone, and then I had a copy of it. That was a cool idea that we don't really have anymore.
I didn't know it had post-it notes. I really didn't. Yeah. Interesting.
I remember there was a whole semester I did that with students where I was preparing them for a presentation, and I would write out my thoughts on the post-it notes.
Right.
And then when we'd meet, I would go through it, and then I just give them the post-it note at the end and say, here, these were my thoughts. And if there was something they didn't, you know, really pay attention to, I knew exactly what I had written on that post-it note. So, but the LiveScribe was a cool idea.
And it was.
Never really advanced. I think it might still be around, but I don't think it got as big as it could have, just because.
Well, I liked it because it could record audio and synchronize it with what you're writing on the tablet. So you could tap on the tablet later on, and the audio recording, which could be transferred to your Mac. I guess it could work on a Windows PC too, but to your Mac or PC, and then it would play the audio portion of what was said while you were writing that item. And I found that a really good way to review meetings. The only downside was I felt like, I don't know if it was a legal obligation, but I felt like it was an ethical obligation to let people know that I would be recording the meeting, the audio recording. And some people would be kind of like, I don't know. But most people are like, yeah, okay, you're only going to use it for personally, not going to resell it. I go, yeah. And John, I don't know if you know this, but I actually used it to record some podcasts back in the day. When I didn't have any, you know, handy recording tool for Skype at the time, what I would do is, if I didn't have a Mac around, I would, put a speakerphone on, and I would record it using LiveScribe audio, and I would take notes while I was talking to the person, and I would release it as a podcast. In fact, I think I'd have to go back, but I remember I had a chat with somebody from the FCC about the then new E911, digital E911 that would allow text messaging as a 911 call. And I remember asking him if it was okay, and he said it was fine, you know, to record him using this LiveScribe thing versus something else. Well, actually, he knew it, you know, before we did it, because he knew it was going to be a podcast. But I probably used it, I don't know, a dozen times for that. It was really handy when I was in an environment that didn't let me carry a MacBook around or something.
Well, and, you know, it is still around. I'm on their website right now, and they still produce the pens. Huh. They still produce the journals and everything else. So if you like paper, you can still have the best of both worlds. Or you can just be like me and go with, writing it in an electronic format already on an iPad.
Right. And a number of apps, including, I think I use, what am I using these days? I think I'm using Notability. Notability has a feature that lets you record audio while you're typing or writing, I guess, with an Apple Pencil. And so you can go back to the audio stream and, you know, hear what the person said if you're just taking kind of cryptic notes. Why did I write this down? You know, that kind of thing. So really handy. And, of course, you can attach photos and all that other stuff. So it's even better in that sense. But you know what? For me, it was a, I think like for you, it was a great, what I call a Pony Express technology. And for folks who remember the history of the Pony Express, it only, even though it's kind of legendary, at least to those of us old enough to have seen movies and TV shows that included the Pony Express in the 19th century, the Pony Express only lasted 18 months. That's the entirety of its history. And it basically was there to provide relatively short-range messaging. And by that, a short range, I think it was like 30 miles or so, while the telegraph lines were being built out from the east to west coast. And then when the telegraph lines were established from coast to coast, the Pony Express was no longer needed. Well, mostly no longer needed, and sort of disappeared into history. But so I tend to call these kind of intermediate solutions Pony Express technologies. And this was a good one. I really enjoyed the time I used it. There was some frustration, especially in synchronizing near the end. For some reason, like active sync, as time went on, synchronization became more and more problematic. I could never figure out why. It should have gotten better, but it didn't. But yeah, that's a good one. I'd forgotten about that one. Oh.
So let's see. The next one is something that, you know, you buy something and you go, wow, that I don't think it's going to be so useful. And then it actually is. I ran across that I have bought a thing of eBags packing cubes in 2011. And I didn't realize it had been that long ago because I use them frequently enough now whenever I go on a trip that I think, oh, I must have just gotten these recently, because usually I don't use things that are older than 9-10 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you've never, hopefully this year we will all be able to travel again at some point. And it's a legit purchase to get some packing cubes to help with your organization of your clothes when you're packing it up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't have the eBags packing cubes, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Eagle Creek brand, John. Mm-hmm. But I started buying Eagle Creek brand stuff, boy, I want to say the early 90s, maybe late 80s. I don't know how long they've been around, but I want to say at least early 90s. And I bought Eagle Creek's packing cubes as well as a bunch of other of their kind of travel or, you know, running around gear. And yeah, they're great. Packing cubes in general are great. So
that was kind of a quick one. And then another one that, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast before. It's the Keyspan by Triplite presentation remote. And I still do not understand why the feature on this remote, none of the other presentation remotes that I know of have it, and that is full mouse movement. Mm. It actually had a little thumb trackpad on it. And so it wasn't just you hit left and right on your PowerPoint. Right. You could actually move the mouse around, which was incredibly useful when you'd be halfway across the room and something, popped up and you had to dismiss a dialogue box or something on those lines. So if you do find yourself still giving presentations sort of the old-fashioned way where you don't have a device that's directly casting up to the screen or streaming up to the screen, get one of these things or get something like it that actually has full mouse movement. I guess find one that has that versus just spending your money. Because it really wasn't that much more. I think it was maybe only $5 more than the ones that just had a right, left, black the screen button. And this thing had full media controls and full mouse control. And so, I still use it. It's still the one that's sitting in my office whenever I have to give a presentation.
I don't know if this does exactly what the Triplite does. And I always think of UPSs because I had a couple of UPS, Triplite UPSs. But I don't know if it does what the Triplite. But I remember Sven and I had a discussion on this podcast with you a number of years ago about the Logitech Spotlight, and it has kind of a round iPod like wheel type device that I think you can move it like a mouse. I'm kind of looking at it right now. So if you're looking for something, I would say take a look at the Logitech Spotlight. That said, you know, it's funny because just last year I was talking this, or maybe 2018 or 2019 or 20. Yeah, either late 2019 or early 2020. I was remember talking to Sven about it because I was looking to buy like a bunch for my office, you know, for presentations or just dropping it off at large screens for group meetings. But of course, we don't have group meetings anymore, at least not in person.
Yeah.
So it's not on my, things to buy list anymore. Also, we have no money anymore. So, Another reason why it's not on my things to buy list is nobody has any money anymore. At least for stuff like that, you know, we're kind of in a keep the lights on mode right now. Okay, the next one, I don't know what this is. You got to explain this one to me.
Okay, so this one is a tool that I didn't know existed until I found it on Amazon. Okay. And it is, if you've ever had to change a watch band on an older watch, before we had these quick release watch bands where you actually had a tension bar that you had to take like a little flat blade screwdriver and slide over.
I've bent those.
This thing is a spring bar tool. It is $8.50, and the ends of it look like little U's, like a little U channel. And you literally slide it in there, press down, it will release the tension, and it makes changing watch bands very quick and very easy. And you're not, you know, stabbing yourself with a flat blade screwdriver or having the bar go flying off into the middle of nowhere and not knowing where it went. But I'll never forget when I bought this thing for $8.50, I got it and went, where has this been my entire life of crappy, you know, watch band changes?
Yeah.
So if you don't have a fancy watch that has a quick release watch band and you do like to change your watch band every so often, this thing is the cool thing for you.
Now, I know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, for many years I wore a regular watch, and I know people still wear watches, especially the watch aficionados, but do you happen to know if the high-end watches, I mean, regular watches, have quick release these days, or do they still have this kind of tension release, or, you know, people who pay that kind of money don't worry about this stuff because they have somebody to do it for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you pay that much money, you have someone that can change the watch band for you, because I don't really know how the designs are on some of the higher end watches.
Yeah, you know, if you have a $100,000, you know, whatever Rolex, you probably have a guy whose job, you know, is to like change your band every now and then. Like, hey, where's Fred? You know, you just need a guy to change your watch band.
Fred the band changer. Yeah, he'll get it.
All right. I don't know what this next one is either.
So the next one is an inflatable queen size bed.
Wow.
This is one of those ones where so my wife and I travel fairly frequently, and sometimes we're on vacations with people where it's, you know, an Airbnb sort of situation, and someone's like, well, we need another bed or this and that. This thing, you know, we had the Coleman camping beds that, weren't that great of quality. This one was I think, $129, and it had the motor and fan, everything built into it.
Wow.
And we probably used this thing 2 or 3 times a year for the last 5 years, when either people come to visit and we need a spare bed, or we're going somewhere and there needs to be a spare bed. And I just have been amazed at how well it's held up.
So
it's $130 when we bought it. And
since you actually carry it, how, when you fold, whatever it is you do to it, when it is in a transportable mode, how big is that? How much volume is that?
Think of like a larger duffel bag.
Okay, so it's tiny.
It's heavy.
Yeah,
it's not tiny, but it is big and heavy. It's kind of like a cross between a large duffel bag and a full trash bag.
Yeah,
is I guess what I would kind of describe it as. But the nice thing is, since it has the vacuum built into it, the motor built into it, it will actually also remove the air and create a negative pressure inside of it so that it gets all the air out.
Interesting.
So it does make it pretty easy to roll up and put away when you're done with it, but.
So for
it's one of those things I think a lot of people don't really know exists. If you've only had the camping ones and thought that, air mattresses are horrible, you would never even know to try this.
You know, it's funny because on the mainland where you live, I know road trips. And when I lived on the mainland, it was like normal to go for hundreds and hundreds of miles to go visit somewhere, you know, in a car, right? In your own personal car. In Hawaii, you know, we don't really have road trips. Because, you know, the most you can do is go around the island and come back to where you started. So, and, you know, on where I live on Oahu, I think the around the island drive, if you don't stop, is maybe like 4 hours. And that's it. You're done. And that's it's 4 hours, not because it's, you know, hundreds. I don't know what the perimeter distance is. But you have to stop for traffic lights. You got to go eat lunch, you know, or whatever. And you want to go look at stuff. Otherwise, it's probably like 2 hours. I don't know. But we don't have a concept of road trips here, really. Well, maybe on the Big Island, where the volcano is. That's pretty big.
We still sort of have those, you know, when, you know, you can travel and see people.
I was just watching, gosh, what was I looking at? I was looking at an old photo, And I think it was a bunch of us, and we were all standing around in a big crowd, and I had like shudders, like, oh my God, no social distancing. What were we thinking?
Yeah. We thought it was safe. What's wrong with us?
Yeah. Okay, the next one I do know about, but I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. They're ones that I'm still using. The Beats Solo 3s that I am using right now to record this podcast and listen to you.
Yep.
And again, the whole reason they made the list was I didn't realize I bought them as long ago as I bought them. You know, they're now 5 years old.
Wow.
And so it's one of those things where it's really shocking to have something last that long. The battery life has been perfect on them for the whole time I've had them. The only thing I've ever had to do is replace the ear cups after a couple of years when the old ones started flaking.
Yeah.
So I just bought a pair of replacement ear cups and put those on. But again, it's sort of interesting to think about the longevity of certain things. We think about how things get obsolete very quickly, and we don't talk about the products that we've been able to successfully use for 5-10 years without an issue.
That's a good point. And I assume that it's rechargeable versus like you put in little batteries or you replace the batteries. Okay.
Yep. Recharges over USB micro.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I used to prefer devices where you would put in a, you know, AAA or AA battery or something. But because in Hawaii, batteries tend to corrode and explode a lot faster than do in the mainland, for most because of salt air and heat, probably. You know, I've lost a couple of keyboards because I forgot to change the battery and I don't use it that often. You know, they just explode and the keyboard's ruined. Recently, and so the Anker and Arctech keyboards I've been buying are both USB rechargeable, so they're great. I recently, however, bought a Logitech keyboard. I forget what the number is, maybe M380 or something like that. But anyway, it's a great keyboard, but it has normal alkaline batteries powering it. And I'm a little bit worried about how long it's going to last. And it used to be the opposite, right? We used to worry about like 500 charges. Remember that? You can only charge your NiCad or whatever it is we used to use in the old days 500 times and they're useless. I used to worry about that. And I preferred, like I said, you know, regular alkaline batteries or whatever. But now it's the opposite. And so, but that said, the Logitech keyboard is pretty inexpensive. I think it was $30. And it's pretty comfortable to type on. Anker might be a little bit more comfortable, but I just wanted to try something different with one of my devices. And also it handles multiple devices, which my Anker doesn't. So cool. Okay. The next one I was always curious about, but it was just too expensive for me to justify. So tell me about
this. And it probably should have been for me. So I had an original Kindle back when they first came out, and then eventually it died. And so in 2017, when I was getting ready to go on a – or 2016, I was getting ready to go on a beach vacation, I bought a Kindle Oasis. And I thought, this will be great. I'll use it at the beach. And I did use it at the beach. And that was the only place I used it. And to this day, I take it out every so often. I charge it. It still works perfectly fine. But I don't think it was worth the $300 I paid for it because I hardly ever use it. It really reminded me that even though certain things are really great in niche, if I were going to the beach, now I have it, so I would use it. But if I didn't have it, would I buy a new one? No, I would just use my phone or I'd use a tablet. Even in direct sunlight, I'd just be under an umbrella or something like that so I could see my screen easier. So. Yeah, the Kindle Oasis is a nice device if you really like e-ink displays, if you really don't like backlight, although it does have a backlight, but if you really don't like a strong backlight, I would recommend it. It's a great device, but you got to really know if you're going to use these things or not sometimes.
Yeah, the Kindle is an interesting niche, or at least the Kindle e-ink devices are an interesting now niche market because it really, you know, the original Kindle really created the ebook market, even though there was one previously. As we know, they all pretty much failed miserably. You know, there and like I still have ebooks from the Pocket PC I can't read anymore because the DRM doesn't work. But you know, on anything else, I would put the file on. But I bought the first what I call affordable Kindle. I think it was like $120. It was e-ink. I don't know where it is. I should go look for it. See if it still charges up. But I wonder, you know, and it's saving grace even to today is that it runs or it's very readable in sunlight, which is why you bought it for the beach reading. I wonder how large that niche market is because I think my wife still uses one. She has an iPad, but she uses an e-ink Kindle to do actual, you know, like reading of novels and stuff. I I don't see many people carrying them, though.
Very small niche, and it is interesting to consider what we think is worth that niche and what we don't.
Yeah. That said, you know, I did buy, I've bought now two Kindle HDs, 8-inch devices. They're like, I think I bought the first one for $50, and I bought the more recent 2020 model for like $60. They're colored, you know, I haven't really tested them outside, but, you know, for $60, they're a great little device. I'm really enjoying them. I really am. You know, they're based on Android, but not Google's. They're forked from Google's Android, so they don't really have a lot of good googly stuff, but still a lot of fun. Okay, next one. That's a lot of money for this.
So, yeah, a few years ago, I'd always heard this rumor that if you had a rechargeable, reusable razor, it was better than buying razor blades every few months or every few weeks or however often you needed to. So I did buy a nice Braun Series 7 razor. And since, you know, I bought it in 2016, I totaled up all the stuff I've ever bought for it. So the cleaning cartridges and the replacement head every now and then. So it's been about $400 for the whole thing in the last 5 years. So if you find yourself, if you've ever wondered what the cost breakdown is, if you find yourself paying more than $80 a year for razors and cleaning supplies and anything else you need for shaving, then it works out well to get one of these because they have, it has lasted and it doesn't look like it's going to die anytime soon. But that was something I looked on my Amazon history again. It was a, wow, I can't believe I've had that long revelation.
Now, John, for those of you who know John, you know that off and on, and right now it's on, he has a beard. And it's not, I don't think it's a COVID beard. You know, because a lot of people grew beards just because they couldn't get haircuts and stuff. But John has, I've known John both clean shaven and with a beard, and right now he's got a beard and mustache. So why do you need a razor, John? I mean, I know you need like beard trimming things, but.
Yeah, the sides of my face I do shave.
Oh, see, I've never grown one, so I don't know.
Then the bottom of my face I do shave that. Otherwise, I can't go full beard where in 2013 for a while I did have a full beard that covered everything. And it just, my face is lost when I do a full beard, but so I do have to shave a little bit, just not a lot right now.
Okay, so as a person who's never grown a beard, and quite frankly, if I did, it wouldn't be much of one. It'd be a typical, well, we shouldn't say typical, not all Asians have a typical anything, but it'd be more or less kind of like a, you know, an Asian villain scraggly beard thing. It would just probably what I would have if I tried.
That could be your retirement, you know, persona.
I got to tell you, when we were in our, you know, lockdown, our I guess our tier one lockdown, where, you know, everything, a lot of stuff was closed, and you know, you weren't even supposed to drive much. I couldn't get a haircut for 3 months, I think, and my hair kind of grew pretty long and scraggly, and I was thinking, maybe I want a ponytail. You know, it's one of those things I always wanted to do when I was a young person. But, you know, my dad is still around. He goes, you look like a hippie. You know? And so I never did. And so this is what I discovered. I don't like long hair. It's really uncomfortable. So after my 3 month forced experiment with long hair, I got it cut to what I've always had it my whole life. It turns out my dad was right. Okay. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I have both. So every day I use a rotary razor, like the one, like I guess the Braun is. In fact, I think I have a Braun. It's not $190 though, or $191. But that's what I use on my daily. But once a week, I like a nice close shave. So I use an actual, you know, regular manual razor. In fact, today's the day. Sunday's the day I get a nice close shave, so I'll do that. Wow, that's a lot of money to spend on it. I'd have to think about it. I think the most I've ever spent on anything like this is probably $70. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to sell you this one. I'll sell you other things on the list, but I'll sell you a Kindle Oasis if you want that.
Okay, the last one I find interesting, too.
Yeah, the last thing on the list is what I'm actually using right now as I am sitting here, and that is a rolling, standing, sitting desk/cart. So about 2 years ago, I decided I wanted the ability to have a standing desk, I also wanted it to be mobile, so I wanted it to be able to roll around the room. I could easily move my desk and everything. And I found a product, a company name is Vivo. For $300, it will go all the way up to, I forget how high it actually raises, but it goes high enough that I can stand as a 6'3" person and use the computer comfortably there. And it goes all the way down to, and so the height difference is between 23.2 inches to 49 inches. So it's a pretty large amount. It's got a very large surface, 36 by 22 surface for the desk. And yeah, you can move it. And it's one of the best purchases I think I've made in the last 5 years. Just the ability to, you know, after, as I've, if I'm walking around and working on stuff in my apartment, I can easily walk over, do a few things at the computer, walk around, do what I need to do. I'm not constantly getting up, sitting down, getting up, sitting down. So I highly recommend it. And it will lead you to buy others. I now have another one of them at my one office. And then at my third office this last week, I installed a monitor riser. So now I can turn that desk into a standing desk if I want one.
You know, it's funny because I remember years ago, I mean like 15, 20 years ago. So I obviously haven't looked at these in a while. But I looked at, I think it's called, I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, I got it right. Anthrocart. I don't know if you've seen these, which sounds similar to what you bought, except they start, well, the list price starts at like $1,000. So I never bought one because they're just way too expensive for me. But at $300, this sounds very, you know, affordable relative to some of the high-end kind of things I looked at many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. So I'm looking at the Anthrocarts now, and it's very similar to that, but it is much cheaper.
Yeah.
So if you've ever wanted to, and plus, I fully believe it's not a great idea to go full on standing only. I've had a lot of friends that have decided to ditch their sitting desk and go standing only, and then they end up with foot problems because they're standing too often.
Good point.
And so what, you, and what you want to be able to mix it up.
Yeah, and you know, if anybody, if any of you have ever shopped at a big box store like Costco, you'll notice, you know, there's a, I don't know if there's a Costco near you, John, but, or if you've ever been in a Costco. But so at Costco, which is a membership type store like Sam's Club and some other, Kmart used to be a membership store in the old days, by the way. When you exit, they check your receipt. And so there's usually two people standing by the door checking receipts as people go out and doing a quick count of number of items in your cart so you're not stealing anything, presumably, or anything like that. And they have to stand, you know, I don't know how, if it's all day, but at least a couple hours a day. And they all have these special standing mats that are, you know, designed to literally let you stand for hours at a time. You know, mostly not quite motionless, but mostly motionless. And these days they're behind a plexiglass, so I can't really see their feet. But I assume they're still standing on those. Maybe I'll ask them next time I go to Costco. Are you still standing on those special mats? And I think you can buy them at Costco. I've seen them. They're pretty interesting. You know, what the other thing I want to talk to you about in a future podcast is more about telework and the tools that enable telework and some other things. I'm on a little committee right now that's looking at telework just from a policy point of view, but looking at it going forward. I don't know how much they're going to go into implementation, but it's going to affect thousands of the way thousands of people are enabled or not enabled to work in the future, even after the pandemic. So I've got, even though I won't be around long enough to see the results of this, I think, you know, there are a lot of people who will be affected after me. So I've got a lot of interest in this particular topic for this and other reasons. So we should talk about it because I've been listening to some podcasts. I'll go find the name of it later. I've been listening to podcasts that really talks about telework, especially from the point of view of pandemic and planning forward. And it's interesting, you know, they talk about, well, you know, it's best if you have an individual room dedicated to an office. In Hawaii, our homes are so small, at least for most of us. We don't have the luxury of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I sit at my dining room table and my wife is working from a table she bought and put in a bedroom and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, working, making more optimal a non-optimal situation, you know, given that perfection is not an option for many of us who simply don't have enough money or space, and usually not enough space because not enough money. But but it's a really interesting situation that I'm sure affects, you know, a lot of people, at least in the places I live and probably other places like in New York City and stuff. And also the, is this the right word, John? Diaspora? The parent, you know, a lot of people, a lot of the tech companies are leaving the Bay, San Francisco Bay Area to go to cheaper areas, and how that affects things and the social dynamics. Anyway, lots of stuff I'd like to get your thoughts on. We'll probably bring some friends on who've, you know, got a lot of experience in this too, and we'll get their thoughts on it. Any rate, for a podcast about nothing, we got 52 minutes under the belt. So thank you,
John. About par for us.
So thank you, John. And we will talk to you next time.